You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our second and final of two podcasts on diagnosing and managing growth hormone deficiency across the lifespan. How does your approach compare with the experts? Hosted by Med Learning Group. This series is designed to meet the educational needs of endocrinologists, pediatric endocrinologists, and other healthcare professionals who manage patients with growth hormone deficiency, or GHD. My name is Surabhi Dangigarimella, and I'll be your host for today's podcast. In the prior episode, we talked about the challenges in achieving a timely and accurate diagnosis of GHD in pediatric and adult patients. We also discussed the clinical profiles of long-acting growth hormone therapies and the benefits and drawbacks associated with traditional standard of care therapies for treating patients with GHD. In this episode, we will delve into the challenges of providing continuity of care for pediatric patients with GHD who are transitioning into adulthood and how to individualize the long-term management of GHD in these patients. Let's get started. Joining me today is Dr. Kevin Yun. Dr. Yun is Professor of Medicine and Medical Director at the Barrow Neurological Institute Pituitary Center, University of Arizona College of Medicine, Creighton University School of Medicine in Phoenix, Arizona. Dr. Yun, it's wonderful to speak with you today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
So the first episode of our series focused on diagnosing GHD and introducing long-acting growth hormone therapies for treatment in pediatric patients. And in our episode today, we will discuss what happens to pediatric patients as they transition into adulthood. In your clinic, Dr. Yun, when do you initiate conversation about the possibility of adult GHD?
Thank you. My policy to talk about the possibility of childhood onset patients with growth hormone deficiency when they're transitioning over is really to talk as early as possible when they are actually diagnosed. So the earlier, the better. That's my recommendation. Now, I'm an adult endocrinologist, so I don't usually get the opportunity to see these patients when they are originally being presented because they are typically a child and together with their parents. So I actively encourage my pediatric colleagues who are generally the first specialists who manage these patients to start talking about the possibility of adult growth hormone deficiency early in their interactions with the patient. However, as the patient gets older, perhaps they could introduce the possibility of adult growth hormone deficiency to the parents. And when the patient becomes more independent, then perhaps the patient could also take more responsibility and take more ownership of his or her condition. This is especially relevant in pediatric patients with a defined cause of isolated growth hormone deficiency and those with panhypopituitarism, because these patients are typically likely to continue to be growth hormone deficient when they enter into adulthood. And the concept of persistent adult growth hormone deficiency is important because all pediatric patients who are treated with growth hormone treatment should really be retested in the transition period to rule out persistent growth hormone deficiency as they progress into their adult lives after growth hormone treatment has been discontinued. So this is really important. So really, in summary, the earlier the better.
In your experience, Dr. Yun, where are the current unmet needs in transitioning to adult GHD care?
Yes, this is a key question. So the main unmet needs challenges, I should add as well. Firstly, I would say the perhaps lack of education and or communication with patients regarding the importance of treating individuals with growth hormone deficiency after linear growth is complete. This involves metabolic and bone changes, which are crucial, particularly in that time period, that patients and their parents need to know the importance of that happening during that transition period. Accurately identifying suitable candidates for seamless continuation of growth hormone therapy is also an important yet unmet need, because not every patient has growth hormone deficiency going into adulthood. So that's why we recommend testing these patients, or all of them, as they go through the transition period. Having a smooth workflow that allows patients to be re-evaluated in the transition stage for persistent growth hormone deficiency is also key. And certainly it depends also on different healthcare systems and different workflow patterns. But if you have that specific workflow where the pediatrician communicates effectively and seamlessly with their adult colleagues, I think that is important so that this group of patients are not neglected or that they are not followed up. So the key unmet need is to establish a smooth workflow for these patients to be transitioned over. There's also the fact that we need to also acknowledge whether the pediatrician or adult endocrinologist's responsibility in conducting follow-up. And again, communication is key here. And if the pediatrician and adult endocrinologist has that understanding who is supposed to be managing these patients, that's also an important factor. The other unmet need is that we have several growth hormone stimulation tests that we need to be using to test these patients for persistent growth hormone deficiency as they move into adulthood. Now, the problem is there are no specific studies that actually been performed to validate growth hormone cut points that should be used to specifically test transition patients as to whether where the cut point should be to diagnose growth hormone deficiency. So that is also a major unmet need that studies need to be conducted. Finally, there may be also issues with payers that may dictate where patients should be going for their supervision and management of adult care and also for testing. So this may result in inconsistencies in the laboratory analysis and interpretation. And also there's a lack of standardization of IGF-1 and growth hormone assays that may pose a problem for accurate and consistent testing and treatment monitoring for these patients.
In your opinion, is a collaborative multidisciplinary approach important when it comes to transitioning pediatric patients to adult care? And if yes, can you describe who the important members of this transition team are?
Establishing a multidisciplinary transition service for patients with growth hormone deficiency is utmost importance and key. And the problem is that, again, these multidisciplinary transition services are scarce in most institutions. Now, the thing with these services is that they are crucial in facilitating and navigating continued surveillance and education for these patients and their caregivers as well. So the following are the core team members of the multidisciplinary team. Number one, the adult endocrinologist. The adult endocrinologist could act as a conduit to initiate or establish effective communication lines with the pediatric endocrinologist or vice versa as well, and other medical specialties that may be involved in the treatment of these children during their time when they are being tested for growth hormone deficiency. Consults with referring physicians regarding patient history and treatment and preferences are also important factors that the endocrinologist could take on board. They could continue consulting with the pediatric endocrinologist as needed until the patient is ready to be transferred over to adult services. They could also continue consulting with pediatricians and oncologists or long-term cancer survivor providers as needed. The other key member, obviously, is the pediatric endocrinologist because they tend to be the first specialist that sees these patients first. And importantly, they need to educate the patient and or the caregiver on the importance of growth hormone beyond its role in promoting growth during the childhood and adolescent years. Pediatric endocrinologists could also set the expectations of the patients about the possible need for long-term growth hormone therapy, and they could continue to shape patients' expectations about switching to adult endocrinology providers, educating patients on the types of treatment available, and also involving themselves directly with an adult endocrinologist while they are still seeing the patient. In other words, they could bring in the adult endocrinologist into their clinic, and they could be perhaps having a joint clinic with the patient as well. But the crux of the relationship with of the pediatric endocrinologist is to provide trust and stability for the patient so that when the transition starts to occur, the patient is trusting that the recommendations provided by the pediatric endocrinologist is at ease and comfortable for the patient to set forth the seamless transition to the adult services. There are other key members too, importantly, the endocrine nurse and the nurse navigator. Some places have nurse navigators, and their role is to provide education and navigate on the directions to the patient and caregiver, which medical specialties that they should be seeing at what time points and how often. So they could act as the go-to person to communicate with the adult endocrinologist and perhaps the medical oncologist as well, acting as a bridge for care to continue to be provided. They could also act as the first point of contact for the patient during a potentially stressful period of change, where they could provide advice and education and counseling, not only for the patients themselves, but also for the parents as well. In certain situations where the patient may have perhaps had cancer as a child, and there are increasing numbers of childhood cancer survivors, the medical oncologist is also extremely important. They could meet and the patient and the caregiver, and they could introduce the concept of adult growth hormone deficiency, possibly impacting the patient's lifelong views on growth hormone deficiency and growth hormone treatment. They could also be providing ongoing safety and treatment efficacy surveillance. And they could perhaps also take on the lead in referring the patient over to adult endocrinologists for transition of care for growth hormone deficiency testing and treatment monitoring. So I think these are the key personnel that could be involved in making up a multidisciplinary team. It really depends on the type of condition that the patient has that is causing the growth hormone deficiency during their childhood years.
Thank you for that, Dr. Yun. And that gives a good segue to the next question in terms of identifying the most important steps in this transition process. And you did point this out, but who would be the health practitioner who leads that process for the patient?
Again, because most of the clinic appointments and exposure of the patient during their childhood years would be the pediatrician. So really, the pediatric endocrinologist or the pediatrician would establish a rapport with the patient and the patient's families. So they could take on the lead in completing the education and setting the expectations, and also maybe arranging for a follow-up or involving the adult endocrinologist. Again, this is very much depends on their comfort level and also the accessibility to an adult endocrinologist and also accessibility to these specific tests that is often needed for testing these patients in this period. So communication is key. Perhaps there's also some degree of coordination involved between the pediatric and the adult care providers. Perhaps the pediatric services could have a nurse navigator or a pediatric endocrine nurse that could also act to direct the patients appropriately to adult services. So I would say the pediatric endocrinologists, pediatricians, or even the pediatric oncologists, simply because they are first specialists that would be seeing these patients during their childhood years.
Can you give us a brief overview of the algorithm that you would normally use to individualize the long-term management of a transitioning patient with GHD?
So the algorithm would be very dependent upon the suspicion of whether or not the patient has growth hormone deficiency. Now, there is an algorithm that was published in the 2019 American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists guidelines. In that algorithm, it kind of specifies or divides it into three possibilities. So you could have a patient perhaps with a history of hypothalamic pituitary tumors as childhood, or maybe a history of cranial radiation from previous cancers, and increasingly traumatic brain injury is been observed in young patients as well. If the patient already has a history like that, then the suspicion should be aroused and then followed by testing with an IGF-1 level. And if that is low, then further growth hormone stimulation testing is recommended. Now, if the patient already has at least two or less hormonal deficiencies in the pituitary function testing, then, and also a low IGF-1, again, those patients would require further testing. The exception to the rule is that, for example, if the patient already has congenital defects, genetic defects, organic growth hormone deficiency, where there is, say, for example, a craniopharyngioma as childhood and very low IGF-1, those are the types of patients where no further testing is needed, because more than 90% of the time, these patients do continue to have growth hormone deficiency, and therefore they don't really need to be retested. So it is very important to kind of classify, or at least have an idea of the likelihood of whether these patients have growth hormone deficiency or not moving into adulthood during the transition period. But nevertheless, most of these patients definitely would require a retesting at some stage. Usually, I would recommend 4 to 6 weeks after discontinuation of growth hormone therapy, after final height has been achieved. And the exception, obviously, is the those with congenital defects, genetic defects, or maybe a craniopharyngioma or a brain tumor that has perhaps had radiation.
Would you like to share a case study with our audience, one where a pediatric patient transitioned to adulthood and consulted with you?
So I recently saw an 18-year-old female. She came to my clinic. The history was that she developed puberty at the age of 12 and a half years. After puberty, she progressed normally, but about 8 to 10 months after progressing normally, it was noted that her growth velocity was starting to decline to 3 to 3.5 centimeters a year. So when she presented to the pediatrician, she was actually treated with, she was diagnosed with growth hormone deficiency, obviously, and was treated with growth hormone therapy. She had a height of 170 centimeters. Mid-parental height was about 175 centimeters. During the time when she was treated with growth hormone, her growth velocity increased by roughly about 2.2 centimeters a year. She had a body weight of 68 kilos with a BMI of 23 kilograms per meter square. And she finally, by the age of 18, achieved the bone age of 17 years. So when she saw me at the age of 18, that was the time when the pediatrician had stopped her growth hormone treatment about 7 weeks prior to seeing me. She specifically says that I do not want to be injecting growth hormone anymore because I'm really tired of these injections. So when I tested her IGF-1 was 186 micrograms per deciliter. The range for her age was between 185 to 780. So she was kind of on the low side of IGF-1 level. I subsequently tested her for growth hormone deficiency with a growth hormone stimulation test. And her peak growth hormone at that time was 2.5 micrograms per liter. So by definition, with a failed peak growth hormone that is less than 3 micrograms per liter, hers was 2.5 micrograms per liter, she has continued persistent growth hormone deficiency. But she specifically says, I do not want to be self-injecting myself anymore because she's just tired of injections. And when patients say that, you know, it's really not a lot you can do and you kind of have to respect their decision. So the patient, after being off growth hormone for 2 years because she specifically declined growth hormone therapy, returned to my clinic, this time stating that she was more physically and mentally tired, affecting her daily life, She was about to go to college. This was proving to be more difficult. And she was realizing now that she really should be reconsidering going back on growth hormone. So we went through an education session with her, and she was open to the idea of resuming growth hormone and subsequently restarted growth hormone, initially on the daily injections. And over a period of time, we were able to obtain insurance approval to transition her over to the long-acting growth hormone, which is administered once a week. So she found long-acting growth hormone a lot easier to use, less injections, and noticed that some of her energy, or most of her energy, actually came back physically and mentally, and she was able to enjoy her college and enjoy going out and having more physical activities, which she loved doing.
Thank you for sharing that case study, Dr. Yan. It sounds like psychosocial support might also be helpful for these patients as they are transitioning through. So before we close, is there any other information that you think is important for a practitioner to keep in mind as their patients are transitioning into adult treatment?
Yes. So the transition of care of patients with childhood onset growth hormone deficiency, generally, I would recommend that they require close communication between different specialties, because often these patients are seen by different specialties, and a collaborative, multidisciplinary team approach is highly recommended, as has been shown to ensure continuity between the pediatric and adult services. It is also important to emphasize that seamless transfer to adult care can help improve body composition, bone health in particular, because this is a very crucial age where bone changes and bone development occurs, improvement in quality of life, and also potentially reducing long-term cardiometabolic risks that may occur over many years in the future.
Thank you so much, Dr. Yan. I'm glad we were able to spend some time today talking about GHD. That is all the time we have today. I would like to thank our expert, Dr. Yan, for taking the time to speak with us. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining us. Hopefully, you're able to tune into our first podcast in this series, as well as other types of CME programs that we offer. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group, who, in support of improving patient care, is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Novo Nordisk, who provided an educational grant for this activity. Have a wonderful day.